Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel. Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Okay, here we go again, everybody.
Oh, man, I'm so excited. I almost choked on my own spit. Another episode of The Suspendables. With me, Jungle Jim Jerome, and him, Russ Cortinel. Cranky Russ Cortinel today, okay? A bit of a cranky little prick.
Fuck you.
Yelling at me and getting short-tempered with him. We got a great guest that's coming on the show today, and it comes on the heels of my girlfriend, DJ, winning yesterday, okay, not just winning, shoots 30 under, shot 60 in one of the days, shot 8 under yesterday in the final round, and I know everyone's, I was looking at everything today, and they're all freaking out about how great the tournament was, which of course, but -8, okay, to our guest, okay, I think this was the best, one of the best rounds, no chip-ins, no chunking it in out of the trap, no jugging it out of the trap, and never made a putt over 13 feet and shot -8. Our guest today, longtime PGA player, three-time winner on it, okay? One of the, I remember watching this guy play in the, you know, he played with Norman, Greg Norman and John Daly, Mark Calcavecchia, Freddie Couples, all those guys, and our guest today is Steve Lowry. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing good, Jim. Glad to be here.
Woo-hoo! Am I wrong there? With the 8 under, that it's exceptional that the guy never made a bomb, never hit one in off the fairway or anything, and shoots -8 with never making a putt over 13 feet.
That's incredible. That's incredible golf. I mean, he won the tournament by 11, and it was just, I mean, he took the lead and he increased the lead. That's kind of like stuff Tiger Woods does. You know, you start off with the lead and you increase it. That's just incredible.
Yeah, incredible round. Let's catch up with you, Steve. Like I said, you won three times. You came on the tour. What year did you come on the PGA Tour? Because you grinded it out there for 8 or 9 years, right?
Yeah, I turned pro in 83, came out of the University of Alabama. I made it on the tour. First year was 1988. So I played, 5 years before I got out there. And then I think 22 years.
It's a hell of a career, eh, Jimmy?
Yeah, I played a lot. I ended up playing over 600 events in that wow. period of time. So it was a lot.
Wow. Wow. That's deep. Wow.
It's a lot of hotel rooms.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, that's a lot of hotel rooms and a lot of time away from the family. But I don't mind that when I'm away from my family. So,
well, I did have one divorce thrown in there.
So. There you go. Okay,
we got to come clean on that. Yeah. You know,
you and Jimmy are tied.
No one's arrived, Steve, until they've had one divorce.
Well, exactly. Okay? I think you know the first four don't really count. I don't think.
No. Practice, Stevie. Those are practice rounds.
After that, you got to take some responsibility. Yeah,
that's the Tuesday, Wednesday of the tournament. The practice.
There you rounds. Go. That's right. That's right.
Rusty, wasn't it you, Steve, who said, you know, Russ lives in L.A. there, and we've all been around a bunch of guys who've been divorced a bunch yeah. of times, okay? And the guys, you know, I don't know, the guy was on his fourth wife or something, and the expression around the golf course, Russ, wasn't it, he's been through a sleeve? Isn't that crazy?
Three houses, two yachts, and 50 million. I think yeah. that was what he was through.
Yeah, through his sleeve.
But in LA, guys will come up to you and go, when you haven't seen somebody in a long time, the first thing is, hey, nice to see you. You still married?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like nothing. Yeah, just rolls off like, how are the kids? You know,
David Foster always says, still married?
I play in a tournament in the desert at Bighorn, and they have a 10 divorce rule per group. So if there's more divorces, it's 10.
Bad company.
So that's who I'm running with down there. So you
that is hilarious.
Oh, that's fucking great.
You can't play with those guys.
No, that's the best ever. Yeah, the total handicap can't be over 20, and the divorce rate can't be 10 guys, 10 wives. We can go now, Russ. That's the greatest ever we've had in a while. Yeah. Steve, let's catch up with what you've been doing. You know, obviously you play golf your whole life. I'm dying to get your comments on where the game is now and how crazy low these guys are shooting. Maybe because of COVID. I don't know. Maybe not. But tell me this, Steve. What's it like being a PGA golfer?
You know, when I started playing golf, it's just for the love of the game. You know, I just wanted to play, and I went to school at University of Alabama, paid for my college, and I wanted to play the tour. And you know, it's before Tiger Woods, so the money wasn't anything like it is now. But you know, it's awesome to go play the greatest golf courses in the world, the biggest tournaments in the world. It's just, you know, it's a dream come true for a kid that, you know, wants to play professional golf. And I was very blessed, very thankful to be able to do that for all those years, and just loved it, just absolutely loved it. And it was amazing.
You know, I remember, if I'm not mistaken, I remember maybe your first victory. And they were interviewing you after through, you know, I think they caught you right on the green. And if I'm not mistaken, the guy said, what are you going to do? You know? And a lot of people are saying, well, I got to, you know, soak it up and all this. And I think you went right to the get together with my buddies and have a bunch of beers. I'm almost sure that was you. Does that?
It sounds like something I'd say.
Yeah. Well, it was, you know. And I said, I love this freaking guy. I love this guy. No bullshit, you know.
He's not going to Disneyland. He's going right to the bar.
That's what he said. I think he said, you know, there's a group of guys that I think you hang out with at your club when you were an active player.
I think that's probably correct. I think I probably said something about that on television about, you know, all the beers are on me or something like that. Yeah. I think so.
One thing that golf is similar to hockey is the camaraderie in the locker room. And I'm not the greatest golfer in the world, but I love hanging out with the guys and being around the room. And that's what you miss from hockey days. Like today I was walking through Gosser Clubhouse and there's Ray Whitney, Wayne Gretzky, Kelly Chase, and they're just sitting around bullshitting and laughing and having a great time. And so one thing I think we have that's similar is that camaraderie and to touch on the love of the game, like you start playing you kept playing because you loved it.
Right.
It wasn't the money. It wasn't the fame, but you wanted to probably win every match. But I think that's true with every professional athlete is you start out just a kid enjoying the game and then it can lead to a professional career. And it's great to hear you say those words.
Yeah. I think the people and the competition is the thing I miss the most.
Yeah.
Being able to be in the hunt on Sunday and being out there with the guys I've known you know, for 30 years. So,
yeah.
Russ, how did you guys meet, you and Steve?
So we met through Discovery, through Gosser. We have some mutual friends. Actually, we have two mutual friends and one is a longtime listener, Greg Stark. We've given him a shout out.
Sure.
He's originally from Manitoba, lives in Seattle and Gosser, and he's a mover and a shaker. And he was at the paddle bar with Steve one day and said, you know, I think Steve should come on your show. And who knows, maybe there's a podcast in his future. And so this is how it all started. And Joel Farkas is a really good friend of yours who you're staying with right now.
Right.
Joel and Dana. And
Joel
so
Dana.
I've just, we've met through mutual friends. So that's how we came to know each other. We don't know each other well, but we've just met in the last couple of years, I'd say.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, Steve, I'm going to get your cell number. I'll call you after because I got a gig. You could be a co-host on a show that I'm doing. Okay. I need more than a fill in. Okay. Anyway, so that's pretty cool. You won the Pebble Beach. Before I ask you about where golf is now, I think, was that your first victory when you won the AT&T Pebble Beach?
No, the first victory was a Sprinter National in 1994. Ironically, I won all my tournaments and playoffs. But
I saw that.
Clutch.
The biggest one for me was the 18th at Pebble Beach. I beat Vijay Singh in a playoff on 18. I birdied the 18th hole to win. So that was probably my biggest, most rewarding victory. I was 47 years old. A little old. Yeah, 47.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So
good for you.
Yeah.
And tell us about now then. You had status certainly on the senior tour when I had asked you earlier about that because I wasn't sure what you're doing now. So what's up now for you? What are you doing these days besides being hilariously funny?
Well, I got to tell you one thing about that Pebble Beach tournament. When you win, Clint Eastwood is the mayor of Carmel. So he's there on the green. And I don't know what to say to the guy, right? This is a guy's a legend, right? So I'm standing there. It was a blue sky, beautiful day. I just won $1 million on the 18th green at Pebble Beach. So I said to Clint, I said, well, they must put you in charge of the weather, not knowing what to say. So he gets the mic, and the first thing he says, well, I'm in charge of the weather. I go, one of the greatest actors of all time just stole my line. Yeah, so funny story, but anyway.
You got to have some good ones, Steve, over the years. You know, Russ and I have been doing this. I don't know. We're up to, I don't know how many shows we are right now. And
63
shows. And we're all about, they call it a hockey podcast, Steve.
Yeah.
And the last thing we want to do, they're used to it now, is talk hockey.
Yeah.
Russ has been bringing it for 60 shows here now and taking everyone inside on him as an athlete in the NHL. And I've always wanted to talk to some guys on the PGA Tour about some of the fun shit that used to probably come down when you were playing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's so many things through the years, but I'm trying to pull them up. I just remember one thing. I was playing with Bernhard Langer in the Tour Championship in Houston, Texas. And everybody's really serious, you know, and the guy's going to announce us off the first tee.
Right.
And he says, and now from Germany, long, hard banger. I couldn't play for six holes. Long hard banger. And I couldn't play after that. But anyway,
you know what? That's what I want my nickname to be: long hard banger. That's a great.
Did you ever play with the Canadian Ian Leggett?
Yes, I have played with him. Not a lot, but yeah. I have played with him. Yeah,
he tells a story about VJ and another guy that I guess on Wednesday they were gambling. That was the day they played.
Yeah.
And so they played for a lot of money. And he had Mike Weir as a partner. And Weir's, he didn't want to play for a lot of money, but Ian got him into this game against VJ and one other guy. So after the round, I think they won 10 grand each.
Right.
And whoever VJ's partner was paid Ian Leggett, but but VJ never paid Mike Weir.
Wow.
So Ian's telling this story and he said to Mike, did you get paid yet? No. Nope. And this is the next weekend. He goes, okay, well, you're going to get paid. So he went up and he poured a bucket of ice into VJ's bag with all his clubs. And VJ said to somebody, who did this? And they said, Ian Leggett. He's going to do it every day until you pay up. So he paid Mike Weir the next day.
That'll get it done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you still play with the boys, Steve? Are you beating it around there?
Oh, yeah.
Chasing the white one?
The guys with the club, yeah. I play, you know, I don't know, a couple times a week, but I just, you know, it's not my focus. I just, you know, I don't enjoy as much as I did. It's hard to, when you play the tour, it's hard to just go out and get up for golf, and I just don't worry about it. So I just play and have fun.
It seemed in those days in the late 80s when you came on and the 90s and all those characters I had mentioned, you know, Payne Stewart would have been around, sure.
Right? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Payne Stewart was, he's the guy you want to hang out with in the rain delays. We go in the locker room and, you know, it's funny because they put Davis Love on the CBS sportscast. And I was telling the guys, I said, I don't ever remember sitting around listening to Davis Love, you know, talking about stories. It's always Fuzzy or Peter Jacobson or, you know, those kind of guys, Payne Stewart, Lee Trevino, those kind of guys. So that's the kind of guy you want to hang out with when you're just sitting around waiting to go play again.
Yeah, how come Payne? Take us inside there a little bit.
He's kind of a jokester. He's a prankster. He always had a laugh, always had a joke. He's always doing something, you know, putting a banana on somebody's head cover. I think he super glued the zipper shut on the guy's golf bag one time, you know. And of course, you know, we're all out on the range watching the guy trying to get into the golf bag. So, some pretty funny stories like that to some of the guys. I mean,
he would have fit in a hockey locker room then. Yeah. We had my brother Jeff on, and he was telling stories about practical jokes and stuff. So it's similar. So Payne would have fit in really well in a hockey locker room. Yeah.
A reminder, the Suspendables are engaged on Facebook. Your comments are welcome always.
The boys are, like, the golfer's pretty down-to-earth guy, isn't he? The pro golfer?
I think so. I think a lot of people, you know, like watching golf because the guys are, you know, they're pretty respectful. You know, they're not getting thrown in jail every other week. They're not doing a lot of things, you know. So people,
that's good.
You know, sponsors are like, okay, this is going to be kind of what you, they know what they get kind of thing instead of worrying about, you know, certain things.
Right, right. Yeah. The way the game is now compared to when you played, how do you see it now, that game? It doesn't seem as much fun that you guys had with all the gym time guys are spending and nutritionists and all this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I think my era, it was more the bar time rather than the gym time.
Sure.
And
sure.
I think one of the bigger things that stands out to me is Dustin Johnson, because I've played with him and I know how athletic he is and how far he can hit it. But he's ranked 17th, I think, in driving distance at 308. I saw that on the website today, and I think that's pretty remarkable to be
17th.
There's 16 other guys that are hitting it longer than Dustin Johnson. And, you know, just watched him dominate at TPC up there in Boston with his length, you know, and his putting. But
right.
I think that's a big factor. I mean, when I came on the tour, it was more like driving accuracy. Guys like Lanny Watkins, Tom Kite, even Corey Pavin, little guys that drove it straight. Those are the guys that kind of dominated the money list and even won the majors. You know, Curtis won back-to-back U.S. Open. So I think now it's completely different. The athletes are different. Their technology is different. I think even the way they set the golf courses up is a whole lot different than they used
right.
to play.
Corey Pavin, you bring it. Corey Pavin hit the famous, you know, you wouldn't see that today, but he hit the famous persimmon forward. Didn't he win a U.S. Open? Wasn't that?
Yeah, he won at Shinnecock. Yeah.
Yeah. Hit that four. And of course, everyone laughs at him jumping up and down. He jumped about 4 inches in the air trying to see the.
Exactly. Exactly.
You played in the day there with the persimmon driver, right?
I did. I played amateur golf and college golf with a MT McGregor with aluminum insert. And I played that all the way through college. And, you know, even on the tour, we guys were using woods. Davis Love was one of the last guys to switch, but we weren't all convinced back then like we are now.
Where do you see golf going now with before we have some more fun? Where do you see it go? Like, Dustin wins by 11, which is unbelievable, but that means everyone else shot 19 and 20 under, which was, you know, winning a bunch of events. What's happening with the game, Steve? What's going to happen with it?
Well, I think, you know, it's certainly a competition at the highest level on the best tour, but there's also entertainment value. If they wanted to and they grew the rough up, you know, and they made the greens, you know, ridiculously fast, they could change the scoring, but then it becomes almost an unfair setup situation. And I think it's good. I think they could probably consider making the green sizes smaller because it's like at Augusta, the 11th hole is designed for like a, you know, back in the day, Ben Hogan was hitting a 3-iron, 4-iron in there. You know, guys are hitting right. 8-iron in there. They could shrink the greens a little bit because they're hitting shorter irons. I think that would help, you know, kind of level out the scoring a little bit. There's not a lot you could do with it. You know, you're not going to go backwards in technology. So it's kind of where it is, and it may not go forward from here. But I think golf's in a good place. I mean, you look at all the other sports, and some of them, you know, I don't want to watch some of them, but I still hear people saying that they enjoy watching golf and live golf. And I think it's in a good place. They got really young guys that handle themselves well. And I think it's in good shape.
Steve, do you think that the low scores have anything to do with no fans? And like, I just, as a guy who snap hooks it and mm-hmm. could kill somebody if I was in that gallery, And I've seen Wayne Gretzky in Halifax play, and he was so freaking nervous.
Yeah.
And you guys stand up with all those people in tight, and you bomb it down the middle. Do you think that is helping?
It might help some of the younger guys. I think the more experienced guys, it wouldn't matter one way or the other.
Right.
I think sometimes the no fans could hurt the guys, the better players, because they're used to getting pumped up. They're used to, you know, like I think Tom Kite used to say, he welcomed the nerves because it made him his game rise to a level that he can't when he's not. So I think they can guys use that to help propel them to play better. But
performing.
Yeah.
We all love to perform.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. I just wondered what was going on through the golfer's brain when they're standing there with nobody out there.
Exactly.
It looks like every other, private public golf course with no fans while you're playing.
Well, I remember Jack Nicklaus saying that, he still gets nervous on the first tee. And I think, guys do deal with the nerves. It's how you deal with them. It makes you the player that you are, because everybody feels it. Dustin probably doesn't look like he is, but he's feeling it. Mm-hmm. And but he's dealing with it. So
right.
I think at that level, the amateur level, it's all about the latest, swing thought or what I read in the magazine. At that level, it's about narrowing your focus and focusing on a very small target, whether it be, the fairway, the pin, the entry point when you putt. It's not about technique, because that's here today, gone tomorrow. Next week, you're on to another one, which is, kind of the merry-go-round that amateurs play. But I think at that level, it's a mental focus. And I think that, you just tune all that out, the grouts and all that stuff, and focus.
One of the interesting things about golf, Steve, and I want your comments on this, is, if someone said to you when you graduated from Alabama,
you're being nice. I played 4 years. I didn't graduate.
Okay. He might go back this fall.
Yeah.
Do it on Zoom.
Let's go college days. Okay. What happened in college? What happened there, Stevie? What happened? What kept you away from class, man? Come on. Let's hear it.
Oh, boy. What kept me away from class? Well, we'd come out of the bar sometime. We had qualifying the next day, and they used to freeze down there. And we're like, oh, well, it's going to be frozen until 10 o'clock. So we're good, And we'd base whether or not we're going to drink more based on whether or not how cold it was out. And but anyway, it was a good time there. Down there watching football, playing golf. It was a really good 4 years.
Right. If you, if someone said to you before you teed up, before you put your first peg in the ground as a PGA player, and they said, listen, here's how it's going to go. You're going to win three times. You're going to have a ton of other big results. You're going to be, at one time you were 12th in the world. You're going to constantly be in the top 50. You'd probably go, I'll take that, right? I'll take that.
Absolutely. I mean, it was a dream of mine to play and be able to do it for so long at a high level. I absolutely would have taken that. So it was really important to me to get to the tour, and to win was a huge accomplishment for me. So, yeah, I just loved it. I really loved all the years I was out there.
And yet the reason I bring that up is because if you're not winning out there now, okay, if you're not the top 5% in the world, I saw this again the other day. Jordan Spieth, right, has done more than anyone could ever dream of doing. And yet he keeps getting hammered about being in this slump, that what's wrong with Jordan Spieth. And I'm going, I don't know, the Masters, US Open, the British. Yeah, fuck, tons wrong with him.
Yeah, I agree. The high expectations when you perform, at such a high level early, and always having to I think Tiger's really good at framing it. You got to frame those reporters and say, my game's coming around. I feel like I'm getting back to that level. It can't be a negative, because they're always going to say the negative. You said, you won three majors, but you didn't win the fourth one or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, I think he's got to frame it, not let it affect his game.
Right. Do you think, speaking of Ian Leggett, he was very vocal one year there about the distribution of cash is way too unfair, that it's way too top-end loaded. And certainly if you look at, the FedEx Cup boys, 15 mil, the guy wins now.
Yeah,
I was way in the dark ages, Steve, when it was 10 million. Okay. When they used to do that. There's a whole story in golf about guys who are just trying to make the top 125, and there's incredible stories of guys giving up and coming back and grinding and having success or not. And almost some of them are almost depressing what these guys have to lay out. What do you think about that, Steve?
Well, I think when you're in the middle of it, you feel one way. I mean, looking back, I think, you know, my whole thing was always, you know, play to win. You know, if I had a chance to win, it's what it's all about. It's what you're going to remember when you retire is the tournaments you won, not, you know, finishing 15th place or something like that. So I'll tell you a quick story about Phil Mickelson. He had come off two wins on the West Coast. I don't remember what year it was. And we got to the Players' Championship. We always have the entire field. You know, we have a player meeting. And so he's won. I don't know what he's won back in that year, but he stands up and he says he thinks that the 18% of the purse is not enough for the win. This is after he's got two wins. So, and he got 125 other guys sitting there saying, you know, really?
Wow. That's ballsy.
So yeah, that's pretty ballsy, but I think that's kind of the way Phil, you know, he kind of puts it out there, but what to your point, I think it should be higher than what it is. I think guys need to go out and play to win and not play to say, oh, I can make $1 million. I don't have to worry about anything. I think it should be higher to win. And I think that guys should be playing to win, not playing to make money.
Wow.
What do you mean when you say higher to win, that the winning amount of money should be higher?
Should be higher. Yeah, I think it should be.
Percentage-wise, right?
Yeah. So if it's 18, it should be 20.
Right. That's a great point. I never thought of it that way. I always thought that, like, as a league coming from the NHL, you know, we have players that make up the league, whether they're the worst players in the league to the best. Mm-hmm. And I looked at your sport and thought, man, it would be nice if some of those guys could make more money to stay in there longer to make these tournaments. But the way you just put it, it's kind of changing my thought process on it, that
right.
put more money, emphasis on winning than having a job.
Like, well, the guys that are carrying the tour are the people that are known.
Right.
And the people that are known are the people that win.
Right.
So you could reduce the 125. I mean, when I was there, Delaney Watkins wanted to reduce it down to 60 players, and, you know, that would be it. So now that's at 125. It's been there a long time. But, you know, being on this side of it, I know that there's a certain amount of players that carry the tour and they have the name recognition and the TV contracts and all the things. And that pretty much carries the whole tour. So,
yeah.
There's a great golf commercial when Tiger was injured and came back, and all the guys who were doing well, they were like partying. They showed them, like, in the commercial, you know, getting out of a limo and high-fiving each other and this and that. And then Tiger walks in the locker room and they all put their heads down like, oh, no, it's back. Oh, shit, the party's over. But he's done so much for golf. I mean, it's just been amazing to watch what's happened with the game. And it's incredible to see the benefits that have, you know, he's helped a lot of people, not necessarily other pros, but sponsors and then kids, you know, that the money he raises and what's it called? First Tee or first?
Yeah. The First Tee program is the kids. Yeah. And they have the Tiger Woods Foundation.
Yeah. And there's, I mean, all of you have done extremely well and made us want to watch on Sundays and on weekends. And so it's been, for me as an outsider looking in, I think it's been great.
Yeah. Well, one thing about the tour and most of the title sponsors, they want the charitable aspect of it, being able to give. And, you know, we just went over $2 billion of charitable.
You know, so great.
I think we do in 1 year with the NFL. It'd be 2 years. So they do a good job. They do a good job with giving back and the charities and all the communities distributing all of the money to the charities. And I think it's a, you know, it's a win-win.
Yeah. I think a lot of people forget about that. They focus on how much the player wins, but they forget about how much the charities get.
Right.
And I heard you guys have done a great job.
I heard a guy say one time, all this talk of Tiger, you played in the Tiger Tiger came on in 95 or 96. But obviously you were around for all that. Will there ever be anything like that again in that sport of golf? I mean, I heard a couple of golfers say, you know, if I walked away from this thing and never won a dime, I got to be around Tiger and play in the same league as he did. Just it's kind of one of the greatest stories in all of sports, what he did. And he came along and you were part of that, Steve.
Yeah, absolutely. I was in Milwaukee the first week he came out, you know, the Hello World interview, and there were talk that he was going to win 7 or 9 tournaments a year. And of course, the players out there was like, there's no way this kid's going to do that. There's no way. And, you know, so things got going and he did. But I was fortunate to play in the final twosome with him at the Memorial on Sunday.
Jack's tournament.
I played the final group with him probably 3 or 4 times, and that was around 2000. It was the best years of my career, 2000, 2001. And he was just so dominant. And I don't know if you remember back, I was talking about being focused on the golf course, but when he was that age, he would put his hands over his eyes, kind of like to scope the putts out. He was just so dialed in. He was never taking practice swings about his backswing. He was not worried about his golf swing. He came out with a focus that was, when you were standing next to him, I mean, it was amazing to see how focused this guy was. And he hit some incredible shots. I mean, I'll never forget some of the shots he hit, but I think the biggest thing is his mind. He is so focused, and definitely was more focused back then than he is now. He went through some teachers and had some swing thoughts, but when he came out as a kid, he'd won 3 USGA juniors, 3 USGA amateurs, and he was, you know, he was it. And he came out with that kind of focus, and, you know, I don't agree with it, but they give I think 6 or 7 sponsors exemptions to these kids coming out, and he won it and made the tour championship in 7 events, which is pretty unbelievable. I think they should give more to the younger guys that, you know, these guys, they're winning in junior golf, they're winning in amateur golf, they're winning in college golf, they're winning, and then they get out there and they should have more opportunities right off the bat. So you're going to get younger guys at the high level on the tour. Right. And I think that's the way the tour's going, younger players.
It was, I don't know who it was though, you know, a Gary player or Trevino or it might've been Nicklaus or Palmer, sort of said out of their side of the mouth one day about Tiger Woods is that all the players should be kissing the ground this guy walked on, you know, for what he did. Do you think he's responsible for a lot of the dough that's in golf right now and the sponsors coming forward?
Absolutely. And I don't think, I mean, they always said that about Arnold Palmer, that the guys, they owed, you know, half of whatever they won to Arnold Palmer because he got the purses up. But Tiger Woods did the same thing. I mean, when the ratings were so high when he was playing, you know, there were $1 billion contracts, TV contracts and stuff for the tour, all brought on, you know, by basically Tiger Woods era.
Right. They said when he came to the Canadian Open, I interviewed a guy one time, an agent from IMG, you know, that big agency. And We interviewed him and said, what's the big, you know, what's Tiger? They're waiting for Tiger to commit. You know, you could wait till the Monday almost, I think, or the previous Wednesday or something. And the poor Canadian Open's been struggling for years and they're waiting. And I said, what's the difference? You know, well, who cares whether, I know it's great if Tiger shows up, but the event goes on. He said, I'll tell you what the difference is. This is, you know, a long time ago, 20 years ago, he said, if he shows up and injects 40 million cash into the city of Toronto, 40 mil hotel, yeah, all, you know, all, that's all the difference. Stuff.
Well, yeah. In those days you had to commit by Friday at 5 o'clock in Jacksonville time. So that's basically when they would find out the IMG, Tiger wouldn't commit. I mean, I don't know if he's hitting drivers and he hit 3 hooks and says, I'm out or what, or I don't know why he would wait that long. But yeah, he would commit late for sure.
I want you to think about caddy stories. For example, Mike, of course, Mike Weir, our famous 2003 Masters champ, Brendan Little, who caddied for him for a long time, is now on Gary Woodland's bag, and Gary won the U.S. Open, of course. They remember interviewing Mike Weir after he was in a playoff, walking down the first hole, you know, of the playoff, and they did it on 10. And then we see Weir, he hit it onto the green. The other guy snapped hooked it in behind a tree and it was a foregone conclusion. He sculled one over the green, and then the guy asked me, he said, "What were you talking about with your caddy walking down the fairway? Like, what, the Masters is on the line here." And he said, "Well, there was a big WWF match the night before, and we were talking about who won this thing, you know." And it was one of the best stories I've ever heard. And Mark Calcavecchia would be right in your era. When his wife caddies for him all the time at the British Open. He's super funny, Calc.
Oh, and, yeah. He's one of my best friends, and our wives are friends, so we've known each other for years.
No shit. Okay, yeah. So he said his wife came to, you know, and the guy interviewed him, says, "You let your wife caddy once a year in a tournament, and you pick the British Open, where you need to have two umbrellas, two freaking rain suits. You know, it's the hardest courses to caddy on." And he said, "Yeah, well, you know, it's, I tried to explain to my wife, all, you know, every second hole is downwind, you know, they go back and forth, link style golf. So she's cold, the wind's against us, puts the rain suit on. And then of course the next hole, she's got to take it off. And then the third hole, put it on, fourth hole, take." He says, "My wife hasn't taken her clothes off that much since college." True story, you know. Tell me about your caddies over the years. You must have a few stories.
Okay, well, one story about Brenda and my wife Heather. You know, you hear comments from the gallery. They're like, "Well, what are these guys got their daughters out here caddying them for?"
Oh, oh no!
Oh boy! Good for you. Good for you.
They like it. The women love to hear that.
Exactly. So caddy stories. Let's see. Oh my gosh.
Did Ian Wilson's caddy, was he really at fault there years ago? He had too many clubs in the bag. Remember that story?
I guess they were hitting two drivers on the range and he forgot to take the driver out before they went the first tee. That's a true story. And I think he was leading. Was he leading after the first round or something like that?
Yeah. He fired him.
Yeah. The funny story is, if you ever knew, you probably don't, Fulton Alum. He's a guy from South Africa and a real character, like real character. And he, you know, he's a chain smoker and he had a style about him that he just was kind of had this vibe. Okay. And he let the caddy do everything. So
right.
A caddy is, stepping the yardages, using the yardage books, reading the putts. Fulton doesn't do anything, right? He just, as the story goes, I wasn't there, but the caddy, on about the 12th hole, goes into the Port-a-John, right? And he's in there for a few minutes and he's not coming out. So they go down the fairway and Fulty says, "You know, what's the number?" And he says, "Pro, I lost the yardage book in the toilet."
No. Oh, no. Oh, no.
He said, "I didn't have the guts to go in after it."
Oh, no.
So he basically played the last six holes with no yardage book. So anything can happen with those caddies, I tell you what. They show up sometimes. They've been in a bar fight. They show up late. You know, they show up limping. You know, it's quite a crew back then, especially.
Yeah. You had good caddies your whole career?
Yeah, I had one guy for 13 years. Dale McElyea was his name. And he was with me for all my wins. And we had some great years, you know, went to the Masters a lot. And he was a really solid guy. So that worked out. And you know, I tried to get the guys that were fun to be around, you know, like to talk, not so serious and that type of thing.
At the last Tiger event at Sherwood Country Club, I asked Cooch's caddy, "Would you guys do a charity event, pick four or five caddies, and we'll do some silent auctions, raise the money for the foundation, and we'll have Craig T. Nelson be the MC, who's a member. And we'll call it Coach's Corner from his TV show and its takeoff of a Canadian hockey broadcast, mm-hmm. Coach's Corner." So Craig T agreed to do it. Cooch got, he got Tiger's caddy. He got, he got, I'm going to blank now, but he had like five great caddies, great players. And they all brought a signed item. And, Tiger's caddy says we had one mic and they're passing around on the stage and he says he grabs the mic and he says, "Do you guys want to have a good interview or an average interview?" And everybody is like, "Good interview." And they go, "Okay, put all your cell phones away. If we see one cell phone, we're out of here." So everyone put their cell phones in their pocket and they started telling freaking stories. And they were so good. And we kept feeding. I just said, keep feeding them beers. Keep feeding them beers. And we just, the bartender just kept bringing them beers. And those guys were up for like an hour and a half. And Craig T, who loves golf and knows a ton about golf, he was asking just great questions back and forth. And we raised 90 grand in like an hour and a half from these guys.
That's awesome.
Just sitting up there drinking free beers, telling stories.
And the one story is
Tiger's caddy. I don't know his name.
Well, it was Joe LaCava, isn't it?
Yeah, Joe LaCava. That's what it is.
So Joe tells this story about Vijay Singh. They ask, who's the most disliked pro on the tour? And they all go, Vijay.
Oh, no.
So he says, here's my story about Vijay. We're on the 10th hole at whatever course. And I asked his caddy a question. And Vijay came over to me and he said, you know the rule. Don't talk to my guy. Uh-oh. And Joe goes, the TV cameras are on me. And I go, Vijay, if you fucking talk to me like that one more time, I'm going to drop this bag and I'm going to beat the fucking shit out of you right on national TV.
Oh, no.
That was it. Vijay didn't talk to him one more time. But apparently Vijay's a big, strong guy. One of my buddies who worked on the first tee. Is it Bradley or one of those companies that looks through your bag to write down everything you use?
Oh, yeah. They do that on the first tee.
What's in the bag? One of those guys. Yeah. And he said he'd shake Vijay's hand and he almost broke it every time. Like, Vijay's so strong.
Oh, he's so fit. He's amazingly fit.
Yeah. Anyways, that's my caddy story from Sherwood.
follow Vijay on Instagram. That's all he does. He must hate his wife. He's never at home, man. All he does is work out and hit golf balls. Interesting enough, Steve, you bring up Vijay Singh. I live way up in Edmonton, just north of Calgary, is 3-hour drive north of Calgary where you played in the Shaw. Vijay's caddy is from Edmonton.
No Alberta. Way.
Yeah. Yeah. Danny Saul, a buddy of mine who's now caddying for him. David Faraday, Steve, has got to be the funniest guy in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I fell in love with him. You can think about him for a sec. I fell in love with him when a guy snapped a drive into the sort of Everglades in Florida, like just, you know, this crazy bush. And one of the announcers said, Jesus, I don't know if I'd go in there. And, you know, all the crocodiles. I don't know if I'd go in there and look for my ball. And Faraday said, I wouldn't go in there and look for my kids. Did you have any interaction with Faraday at all when you?
Absolutely. Yeah. He had some one-liners. I'm telling you what, it was a daily with that guy. But I'm just trying to think of some things he said, you know, but oh my gosh, so funny, this guy. I mean, just natural, right? He's just a natural. I remember we were playing somewhere and he was walking. He was a walking commentator and somebody, like you talked about, hit a big hook into the woods. And he says to me, he goes, you know, if that thing was wrapped in bacon, Lassie couldn't find that one.
And was it Faraday or was it Faraday or Gary McCord who got shoved off the broadcast because he said that they're going to find a guy in a body bag because the guy ripped it over the back of the green and he said there's going to be guys back there in body bags. And the other one he said was
that was Augusta. He got banned. The CBS still, you know, does the Masters, but McCord's banned from commentating because he said they used bikini wax on the greens and the body bags were buried in the greens or something like that. There were body bags in there. He got banned for it for some of his comments, but
loved it. Yeah. Love it. Yeah. Tell me this, Steve, if you didn't, you know, Rusty, we asked in one of the earlier shows with Russ, if you didn't end up playing pro sports and Russ talked about, you would end up being a cop. Jesus, I would have hated Russ being a cop, but, yeah. Were you always going to be a golfer, Steve?
I was a little naive, I think, cause I came out of college with a pretty good record. I'd won, SEC Player of the Year. I'd won some college tournaments and I was highly ranked amateur. So I was a little naive that it was, I thought it was going to be just walk out there and go. And it took me longer than I thought, but, my dad, you know, he always told me, he said he had 7 jobs and he hated 6 of them. And he said, whatever you do, do what you really love to do. And he would ask me every year. I'm like, Dad, you know, I'm still not on the tour. I want to be on the tour. He says, yeah, but do you love what you do? I go, I do. And so he says, you need to keep doing it. And
great advice.
Yeah. So
cool.
That's what I followed until I got out there and finally won.
Wow. And what lies ahead for you, Steve? Tell us how you spend your time now and what you're working on, or what fully retired or what?
Yeah, I wake up and go to lunch. That's pretty much my schedule. I stay up and drink a little tequila with my wife, and just not really adjusting to not being, going. And I'm going to have to get a little more disciplined here, but I got to figure out the next chapter. But right now, just kind of enjoying not traveling and taking it easy.
What are you shooting? You shooting 3-4 under all the time now with the boys?
You know, if I have a good day, I can shoot it under par, but most days it's not. I have about, if we could change the game, I could take 12 of the 18 good holes, I'd be all right. But it's not as consistent as it used to be.
You're like everybody else.
Yeah.
You're like exactly. Everybody else. Now, do you know anything about hockey? It's tough. You know, guys from Alabama, they're not going to know too much about hockey. Do you follow it at all?
I play with the after hockey guys, right? But when I was in Birmingham, there was a team, the Birmingham Bulls. I don't know. That's probably sure. Before you guys' time.
Sure. No, I remember them. Yeah.
I used to play with all those guys at Inverness Country Club. All the hockey guys played golf there. So I played a lot with them. And I'd go to the hockey games. It's great. You know, you guys all know this, but live hockey and, you know, going there, drinking beer, watching hockey. It's just a great time. And that's what we used to do. We'd go watch the Bulls play. And, but I'm not that familiar with, all the hockey. I play golf up here with all these guys, you know, and Brad Hull used to play here. He's moved away, but, Gretzky and, Ray Whitney
yeah.
And,
Ray's probably
Sheldon,
the best.
Sheldon, I play with him.
Sheldon's really, he's dialed in his game.
Yeah. So
Sheldon, which Sheldon?
Sheldon Surrey.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Just got engaged, Sheldon, yesterday.
Again?
Yeah. Three. Number three.
No, first, remember, the first four don't count.
Yeah, that's right. No, he's in a good space.
Don't worry, Steve, about all these years not knowing anything about hockey. Russ was in the league for 17 and didn't know that much about hockey. Over there, so. don't worry about it, man.
That's why we never talk about hockey on the show.
Yeah, that's right. Aren't they good golfers, though, hockey players? I'm always amazed how well they can hit the ball.
Amazing. Yeah, amazing. I mean, you know, I guess it's a similar motion. I don't know, but very strong. They all hit it long. It's just a similar type game when you're playing with hockey players. It's baseball players also. Very, very long.
Well, that's because all the hockey players are high and drunk, Steve, when they play.
There you go. So that's true.
That's the secret. Okay. That's the secret. Steve, this was great, man. I really enjoyed it. It was great to have you on. Thanks a million for doing it. Congratulations on a fantastic career, man, on the PGA. And we'd love to get you on again sometime.
All right, Jim. Thank you. I appreciate it.
See you, brother.
All right.
Take care, Rusty. Good job today.
Yeah, thank you.
Fair job by you, Russ. Fair job.
We need a two-claw show.
Did you not have a White Claw, Steve? What's your drink of choice?
But he said it's a two White Claw show.
The highlight of the show for me, where I went, what? Is my wife and I belt back a few tequilas in the morning. Nice.
I get that straight now. We have the tequilas at night, and I wake up and go to lunch. That was okay.
Yeah, get it straight.
We got it straight now. Take care, everybody. You've been listening to another episode of The Suspendables.
Thanks, Jim.
See you, boys.
Bye.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Cortinel in L.A. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.